All right. Welcome to another episode of Shipping and Handling. I'm your host, Jennifer Redden.
And I'm your co-host, Bridget Smith.
Today we're doing it like a blatantly self-serving episode because we have just been so tired. And we are going to talk about self-care. Yeah. But first, before we get into things, let's thank some donors for this week because I know we have some. So yeah, we would love to thank our donor for this week, John, who says, thanks for your time on the podcast. It's always funny and informative. Because of you, I'm on chapter 19 of In the Woods by Tana French. I've been loving it, but what's with Rob? He's on a downward spiral and I feel bad for Cassie and even Sam. I'm almost at throw the book stage. We feel you extremely.
Yes. That's what I love about it is that you can see his like self-destructive impulses turning on him and like he can't get out of it, and also he's gonna ruin everyone else's life too, and it's so good.
I feel like the Kill Bill sirens start sounding in like chapter 8 of that book and then they just don't stop until the end. In a somewhat related note, thank you to everyone who filled out the survey on SurveyMonkey. We actually got a little email that said you've had 100 people respond to your survey. Yay. So we're probably going to be taking it down in the next week with some more exciting announcements to come. But thank you everyone who has replied and to everyone who has listened and stayed with us in this podcast for so long.
Yeah, we really appreciate you guys.
We do. So, author self-care. We are on the point of NaNoWriMo, which is, you know, the marathon of the writing world. And we thought we would start out a little bit.
Ironically, NaNoWriMo is both a marathon and a sprint. Like, you're
you're going
full speed for like the full 26 miles. Like, most people who run marathons don't do. Maybe that guy who finally broke 2 hours.
Oh my God.
Just like, Excuse me?
Well, I have a point about that, which I will bring up later. But so we thought we'd talk about tips and tricks for sort of survival as an author, mostly because we feel like we also really need tips and tricks right now. So.
Yes.
Bridget, would you like to start?
With ways to self-care? Or
well, I guess start us out with, like, you know, why you think it's important for authors to practice self-care.
Well, mainly because if you want to be in this for the long haul, you have to find a way to do it sustainably. You can't do the whole thing of NaNoWriMo all the time. I mean, I suppose some people can, but they take breaks.
I have a client who does.
They're weirdos, and we can't aspire to all be like them.
Writs of steel.
Yeah, you have to find a way to integrate it into part of your life, and not let it take over everything. And part of that means making sure that you are taking care of your body and your health and your mental health, and all of the things that make you the person you are, so that you can produce the highest quality work.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that a lot of this, you know, a lot of the reasons for talking about this have come up for me recently because back in like, I don't know, March or something, I decided it would be like a really cool idea for me personally to schedule 3 conferences in October. So I did the Nimrod conference, which was great. I did Sirens, which was great. And I did I'm going to do World Fantasy next week. Bridget and I are actually both going to World Fantasy.
Yes.
But I'm just staring down the barrel of like another plane flight and just praying for the sweet embrace of death. And I'm just like, self-care would have been to not do all of these in the first place.
Oh, there was one year I did 5 writers' conferences in 6 months. And that taught me a very valuable lesson.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, I'm only doing 1 a month. That's fine. It was not fine.
Well, and actually, before we sort of move on, something about Sirens that I think I actually haven't told you yet. Do you remember Sabrina Chin, who's one of the organizers?
I haven't been there in a long time.
So Sabrina was like a long time co-chair of Sirens. And was really the brains of the operation. She actually passed away like at Sirens in her sleep. So I just wanted to say that she was great and she was going to be really missed by the Sirens community and to send the best to her family. It was a real weird Sirens this year. We were all sort of like alternating between crying and having the best time of our lives. But yeah, so it just really felt like when I got home, like I was flying home from LaGuardia on like Sunday night, landed at like 11 p.m. and I was just like, I do not want to be here again. But like the flights are paid for, the hotel's paid for. Like,
it's happening.
It's happening. I gotta go.
And yeah, I am in this mindset right now because I have been mysteriously ill for like 7 weeks at this point.
And I'm not laughing at you.
Just, the situation is bizarre.
I'm laughing at all the Victorian like fainting couch memes we've sent each other.
And I've been to the doctor. I've been to the doctor 4 times and it has been absolutely no use. I'm going to go to a different doctor. But yeah, in the meantime, I'm just like, literally all I can do is go to work in the morning, come home and lie on the couch. I haven't read any manuscripts in all of this time because honestly, I don't have the energy for it. I don't have the focus for it. And frankly, everything that I am trying to read is annoying me. So like, this is not fair to anyone. This is not a good use of my time.
Not a great mindset for them. Not a great mindset for you to read submissions. I'm taking you on because I hated it. I want to fix it. It's not like a great mode to be in.
Yeah, and then like I've been watching so much television that I am freaking tired of watching television, but it's like the only thing that I can actually do. I'm not so tired that I like can sleep all the time, but I am tired enough that I can't stand up and do things. So I'm just lying on the couch, like, ugh.
There was a brief period of time where we were all convinced that Bridget had tuberculosis.
Yes, I was like, this would be very much in keeping with my.
It's because he wanted all those Bog Witch novels.
So yeah. Yeah, I'm not coughing anywhere near enough for it to be tuberculosis.
Which we are very glad for.
The consumption, yes.
My dad tested positive for it once. I don't think he actually had it, but he works in a hospital, so he tested positive for it. And he had to be on the medication for 6 months where you can't drink, and he was so grumpy for like 6 months.
And like antibiotics make you feel like crap as well.
They really do. I mean, God bless him. Glad they exist. Don't take them superfluously because you will miss them when you get like fucking
we get the antibiotic resistant super bugs.
I can't depress myself. That leads me to the first thing is like I feel like so much of self-care advice I see these days revolves around like turning off the internet.
Yes.
And I really feel like I'm in that place, but I'm also in that place where I like can't look away.
Yes.
And I can't.
Like, the news is happening, though. How do I?
It's important.
Yeah.
How can I watch all those delightful videos of Donald Trump getting booed at the Nationals game? I mean, Ghost Rose. I want them to win very badly.
But also
it felt good. But it also felt good to my little, like, gremlin heart to see that garbage potato man booed.
In public. Spontaneously.
Felt nice. Felt good. Yeah. It's really tough because, like, for a lot of us, and you know, because authors get this advice too, you know, you're sort of asked to be very online.
Yeah.
As part of your job. And we're sort of asked to be very online as part of our jobs.
Yeah.
And I find it really hard to kind of strike the balance of, like, you know, my phone sends me these very helpful alerts, like, you've been on the internet an average of 20 minutes more a day in the last week. And I'm like, leave me alone. Don't judge me.
My aunt doesn't really do Twitter, but like checks my feed occasionally. And so she said to me at Christmas, she was like, you don't really tweet anymore. I was like, yeah, that's because I removed it from my phone and I have not regretted it.
Yeah. I am forever grateful that neither of my parents really understand Twitter.
Yeah. My parents
like if I
don't
show
care.
Them an original, like an individual tweet, like as a screenshot.
Mm-hmm.
Like for the purpose of like sharing a joke, they will usually be able to get it. But like the whole medium just confuses and depresses them, which is sort of how it does for everybody. But yeah, I mean, I think that I guess the advice I would give there that I have failed to take myself is to sort of put limits around the times and ways that you can engage with social media, especially social media that like stresses you out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I find how often I do it without thinking. It's like I'm just like I run into a point in an email that's hard to phrase. And so I just like open a new tab and suddenly I'm halfway down the page on Twitter. And I'm like, how did I get here? When did this happen? I did not do this on purpose.
This is not my beautiful house. This is not my beautiful wife.
So yeah, I need to set up some more deliberate things that will stop me from doing that.
Yeah, I paid for one of those website blocking software tools. Mm. I have not used it. I'm just like, but then how could I watch Netflix's background noise?
Yes. I don't know.
I only listen to very specific things on Netflix that I've seen like a million times before where I literally am listening to them like it's an audiobook. I'm not even watching them.
I can't do that. I get too distracted. I get mad because I've zoned out through good parts of whatever I'm watching, or I start watching and stop paying attention.
The trick is to only get obsessed with garbage. Listen, I will admit it. I have watched the Fyre Festival documentary on Netflix so many times that I know like where we are. Like, you know,
it's
so soothing to me for some unfathomable fucking reason. It's that music, I think. You know, it's just like fairly. Like, yep. But yeah, so I mean, so do your authors come to you for like advice on how to manage this kind of stuff? I don't think any of mine have.
Yeah, but. Not really. Usually, and what I really appreciate is when they come to me and say, like, look, I'm having a rough time right now because of factors. I know that like you want to see this, but it's not ready, and I don't know when it will be. And I appreciate having that information so that I can accommodate them.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want you to destroy yourself to get me the book.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially, like, even if you're on deadline, if something happens that's going to blow your deadline, let me know and we can fix that.
Yeah.
We can push the deadline back. Editors are almost always totally happy to do that.
I mean, there's only very specific situations.
Yeah. As long as
I'm sorry, my house burned down and all my children have died. Like, yes. I'm not turning that book in. You're like, yeah, you're not.
Fine. I understand. Yeah.
And where can we send flowers?
Like, yes. And so it's, as long as they have advance notice, everyone's willing to work with you, because we all recognize that we're working with people, mm-hmm. not with like automatons that produce books.
Yeah.
So it's, I would much rather have them, and especially when we're not on deadline. Like, if I'm just saying, like, can't wait to read your next book, and when is it going to be ready? And you're just like, look, I can't right now because of various things that are going on in my life. I'm trying, and it's not succeeding, and I'm just stuck. I'm like, you know what? I've been there.
Yeah.
I've totally been there. Take what the time that you need. And like, I have been there where it's just, everything I'm reading seems really boring. And I'm like, reading is nowhere near the mentally intensive work that writing is.
Yeah.
But I still get to points where I'm like, I can't have any critical thoughts about this book.
Yep.
And I need to take a break. So I totally understand. And I want you to take the care that you need.
Yeah. And I think too that the really big thing I think is also communication. Like, we won't know that you're having a hard time unless you tell us.
Yes.
Like, we can see you sort of like vague tweeting about things, but it's more helpful if you say,
send
like, listen,
email.
Things are garbage. and you know, one of the fucked up things about sort of like mental caretaking is that sometimes the thing you most need to do is the thing that your brain is like, nope, you know what, we're not gonna do that thing, but we're really here to help.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I see a lot of the other part of this, I feel like, is like, I see a lot of advice on the internet that's like, you know, you just take care of yourself and like, you know, just don't worry about it. And it's like, well, sometimes you do actually have to worry about
yes.
it. Like things like paying your bills.
Yeah.
Like, you should keep doing that.
Yeah. That's why things like auto pay exist, which.
Listen, I have like barely any of my bills on auto pay, so I cannot actually give anyone that advice. But.
Yeah. Well, I missed one credit card payment and it cost me $50 between the fees and the interest. So I put everything on auto pay as soon as that happened. It was a habit that I got into when I was splitting the bills,
mm-hmm.
Because if I missed it, I was responsible not only for my bill payment, but like all of my roommates' bill payment. And if I, missed it, then I couldn't put the fee on them. So I was like, I'm just gonna set this up on auto pay.
Yeah.
And now it means that like, even if I feel like I can't manage anything in my life, at least I don't have to deal with late fees.
Yes. Exactly. I mean, there's a lot about sort of like automating things that really sort of removes friction from your life. But, you know, when we're talking about authors, like so much of that slog is so like weird and unknowable.
Yeah.
So what do you think that there's anything that is like the biggest challenge that you see come up for authors? I know what mine is, but I wonder what yours is.
You go first and I'll think about that question.
Oh, well, mine is the thing that I have done, which is overcommitment.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Overcommitment, you know, you're like, oh yeah, I'll be in that anthology and I'll do that, you know, pitch mentoring contest and I'll, you know, do these short stories and I'll do this, this, and this. And they're like, oh wait, I can't actually write 40,000 words a day.
Yeah. I'll go to 3 conferences in a month. Surely that'll be fine.
I'll go to 3 conferences in a month and then have my mother visit and then also go to a wedding. It'll be fine. It was not narrator voice. It was not fine. I've gained like 3 pounds. I'm so mad. But like, yeah, I really feel like that's a big thing I see where authors either overcommit or they set goals for themselves that are so intense.
Yeah.
They, you know, it's like they set like NaNoWriMo type goals for themselves. And they're like, why haven't I met this? And it's like, because you're a human with like a job and a child and a cat. Like, you got stuff. Like,
also wants to do things other than just sleep and write all the time.
Yeah, you got stuff going on. Like, you have a dog you have to walk. Like, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes you come home and you make dinner and you walk the dog and you put the child to bed. And you just want to watch like an episode of a thing rather than sit down and write 1,000 words.
Or several episodes. Yes. As happens to me. Now that Schitt's Creek season 5 is on Netflix, go out and do yourself a favor. That's the ultimate act of self-care, is watching Schitt's Creek. Although I guess we didn't tag Schitt's Creek spoilers good enough in that one episode. Because sorry, Jamie. Yes. Sorry. Thanks for still listening, even though you're fancy now.
I have watched the Meet the Parents episode like 3 times so far and like cried cleansing tears every single time.
Cleansing tears. That's right. That's another self-care tip. Watch something where you can cathartically weep about something that isn't your own problems, but is sort of your own problems. And
just have lots of feelings about it. And
Steel Magnolias is that for me. I'm just like, although actually it's Steel Magnolias and now Dumplin' is like up there as like cathartic weep movie. I watched it. I got home and my sister was like still up for some reason. I was like, it's midnight. You have to go to work so early tomorrow. I'm sleeping in until whenever. And she was like midway through Dumplin' and there's this moment at the end of the movie, spoiler alert, I don't think it's a spoiler, but Jennifer Aniston is talking to her daughter's character, Willow, Willa Dean Dixon, who's like the main character. I forget the actress's name. It's driving me nuts. But she's reading this. She sort of found this application that the aunt who's passed away had filled out for the beauty pageant and had never participated in. And she's like, I don't understand. Like, and then she's like, well, where are all her clothes? Where's her things? Because at the beginning of the movie, she was like, donate all that stuff. And then the daughter's like, well, yeah, I donated it. Like,
You told me to.
Well, you told me to. And also, like, she had been mad, so, like, she had donated it. And then Jennifer Aniston's like, I didn't keep enough of her. And my sister and I just, like, so, like, ugly tears, like, on the couch. Just like, because it's a really weird time to be, like, caring for yourself.
Yeah.
In, like, a lot of ways.
Yeah. Especially because it often feels so selfish. And you're like, I should be doing all of these things for the world. Other people need my care as well. And it's like, but it's not sustainable.
Yeah.
You have to find a way to make it sustainable.
Well, and you can't do, I feel like if you do, like, either way, if you balance it too hard in that direction, it becomes painful.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you just think about yourself all the time, it's like, oh, God. If you just think about other people all the time, if you just think about, like, what's wrong in the world all the time, you're not going to be able to, like.
Yeah. And this is, like, the first time in human history that we have been able to consume this level of global suffering on the scale that we do right now. Because, like, it used to be someone in your village died and, like, the community came together and suffered that loss together.
Yeah.
And that was sort of it.
Or, like, the mainstream media would pick, like, one thing to report about, and that was the thing you cared about for the week, and that was it.
Yeah.
And, like, it's good that we can kind of be aware of, because I think that it has led to a lot of people being very aware of, like, how everything is kind of linked.
Yeah.
Like, you can't be mad about climate change without being mad about, like, the rising dominance of billionaires.
Yeah.
You know? But at the same time, it's like, I am but a simple village goose. All I want is the shiny bell and to sit in my house. And I'm not emotionally prepared
for all of this.
Yeah.
Someone was talking about how D-Day would have looked with Twitter.
Oh, my God.
It would just, like, we would
Someone's
see...
just like, yo, there's some American guys rolling through my backyard. What the fuck?
Yes. And it would just
We would have
like...
lost World War II. We would have fucking lost World War II.
But also, it would have just been constant updates from people going through unimaginable suffering. And, like, all of them are experiencing their own and the people next to them. And then we would also all be experiencing everyone's at the same time. And it's just, the human mind is not built to contain that.
Wow, this got real dark.
Yeah.
I don't think we intended this to be, like, this dark.
No, we
intended it to be servicey, but, like, it's hard being servicey in this economy.
go back to the thing, the other thing I was going to say, which is that I used to find Call the Midwife to be a very
oh no, my sister loves that show, and I'm just like, no.
I can't watch it while I am mysteriously ill because there are too many episodes about people getting weird diseases. It's like I watched two episodes in a row, and one was like a young mother who died of a stroke, and the other was a young mother who had Huntington's, and then her daughter also had like childhood onset Huntington's. And I was like, I have got to stop watching this. Oh my God, where are the nice stories about people having babies and women coming together to support them? Please. Why did this show get so dark?
I feel like I had like a thing that I was like, I'm going to put a pin in this and come back to it later. And then I immediately forgot what it was.
Whoops.
You'll never learn, podcast, because I'm not going to remember that shit. Sorry. Ghost Rose. By the time we post this, they will have won or lost.
It will be solved.
Yes.
So what other kind of day-to-day things do you do for self-care?
I mean, honestly, at this point, it's like, I don't even know. I try to like keep on top of my inbox to the best that I can while knowing that I am failing.
Yes.
Like at every moment. That's the other thing, is that like you have to kind of like be able to roll with failure. Like there's some eels in my inbox. I'm like, oh my God, I need to respond to that. But things like making sure that I'm eating something other than like microwave popcorn and like hot dogs from like the corner guy. Like that's a big deal.
And that's also
drinking water.
Yes.
I have one of those little apps. I finally re-downloaded the app where like you kill a plant if you don't, if you don't drink enough water. I still kill a lot of plants, but I'm doing better.
That is also something that I have kind of been able to automate in my life. It's like I have a couple of go-to recipes for lunch. And so I like make those on a Sunday night and like just have lunch for the rest of the week. And then I don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
But that does require being able and willing to eat leftovers for like 4 days in a row.
Well, and for me, since I've been traveling so much.
Yeah. That
I'm just like.
Totally messes it up.
Fuck am I gonna eat?
Yeah, I have no food in the house.
And like, you know, I was trying to eat like low carb and doing this, like, and I'm just like, the easiest thing to prep involve carbs. Prep involve carbs. I'm like, what the fuck am I gonna do? But I mean, I think that really, like, if we can give you any takeaway from this, like, extremely disjointed and exhausted podcast recording session, it's that, like, I think the most important step in self-care is to be completely honest with yourself about your time, your, you know, spoons, your abilities to get things done, your commitments, your schedule, and then planning accordingly.
Yes.
Because I feel like all the worst sort of problems about sort of like burnout are around not paying attention to those things.
Yeah. And not reassessing if things change.
Because you can make a plan and then realize like, oh no. Like in Logan Lucky. When they realized that they weren't going to have you seen Logan Lucky?
No, I have not.
Oh my God, you should. I think it's on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
But it's like the hillbilly Ocean's 11.
Ah.
And they robbed the Charlotte Motor Speedway, like in the middle of like this big ass race. But originally they were going to rob a smaller race, but they were going to lose their access to the site. But they changed their plan because they were like, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
Be like Channing Tatum and Adam Driver. Anyway.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most valuable skills is just being able to like take a pause and be like, this isn't working. How can I change things in order to adapt my lifestyle, adapt my plans to make something that is sustainable, something that will succeed?
Yeah. Or even adapt what I want to do to my lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Because as much as I want to be a person who wakes up at 6 a.m. and like goes to the gym and like,
yes.
I
would also like to be that person. I am never going to be that person.
I am truly never going to be that person. So I've got to figure out other ways to do that because that sure as shit isn't happening. Yeah, I registered for like a 9:30 yoga class this morning and I had to call them like shamefacedly at like 8 to be like, it's not.
No,
I'm going back to bed like immediately. I went to bed at 1 a.m. Like, this is not happening.
I mean, to be fair, booking a morning athletic class after you, the night at like the day after
it seemed
you
like
arrive
a great
a
plan.
No.
My other problem is that like on planes, like there's no Wi-Fi. I refuse to pay for Wi-Fi. So I'm just like, now's my plan to like do some reading and make some, you know, plan my week. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm feeling real, you know, you feel real good on airplanes after like one free mimosa from
lounge. I was gonna say, you feel real good on airplanes.
Listen, I go to the Delta Lounge, I get a mimosa, I pour it real heavy, and then I'm like, I'm good to go. Yeah, I was also, I also thought I was flying Comfort Plus to LA. I am not flying Comfort Plus. And I have a layover in Minneapolis on the way there. Minneapolis.
Oh my God.
Why am I going to Minneapolis? I don't know.
It is on the way.
Ugh.
But yeah, that was my indulgence to myself. Nonstop flight to LA. There are enough from New York that it can be done.
I requested an upgrade to Comfort Plus if it becomes available.
Mm.
I do not think it will become available, but
if you don't ask, you don't get it.
It's so stupid. It's so stupid. John Hodgman apparently has a book that just came out called Medallion Status that I desperately...
Is that about how to...
Well, no, it's about just sort of being... I gather from the description that it's about sort of being a semi-famous person who is not really all that famous, but who has access to all these sort of like semi-private spaces allowed to the very rich.
Okay. Cool.
And I want to be a semi-famous person.
Yes.
Or actually just... a moderately rich person.
Yes.
Who is allowed access to nice spaces.
Yeah, it's like, you know, just famous enough that you don't get bothered.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is we've chosen a lifestyle that really promotes our own fame and not, you know, our clients' fame.
Oh, yeah.
Even the truly famous literary agents are like...
You couldn't pick them out of a lineup. Yeah, no. You're just like, you pass them on the streets and be like... I might recognize Bill Clegg if I, like, saw him, but, like...
I don't think I would. Maybe. Maybe just because he had that one book that was really...
Do we have any more tips?
Yeah, I mean, for me, routine is huge. Like, going to the same exercise class every week and, like, making sure that I have time. I have, like, Jen once wanted to record, wanted to make it so that we recorded every Sunday. And I was like, look, I'm sorry. I need my Sunday afternoon so I can go to the grocery store and make my lunches for the week. I can't do anything
else.
That's my routine. It's part of how I get ready for going back into work on Monday. And so having that settled as like a space in my week and in my life kind of actually means that I don't have to devote as much thought to it.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's there. It's regular. It's what I do.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, shall we go to questions?
Let's.
So some cool shades and on, bless your heart, said, Jen, girl, I love you, but please stop interrupting Bridget so much. So hope this was better.
I think what happens sometimes is we start talking at the same time. And yeah. I yield.
I do interrupt a lot. It's fine. I just interrupted you now. So, all right. Another cool shades and on says, at what point in publishing do books magically appear at my door whenever I thought it would happen by now? I don't know.
Yes.
I mean, books magically appear at my door when they publish and I've forgotten about the publishing. I'm like, oh, yay.
Oh, I did pre-order this. Okay.
All right. So I'm curious, Cool Shades Non says, I'm curious about how maternity leave would affect publishing schedules and deadlines. For example, what would happen if someone has a multi-book deal but then becomes... are publishers flexible with changing schedules? Will they arrange releases to be conducive to the author being available to promote their book, etc.? Are there other situations that you have seen or can't imagine pregnancy and maternity leave affecting anything in publishing?
Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely something that, like, can be taken into account. If you're, like, books in series get pushed all the time for any number of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, like, look, I'm not going to be able to write because I'm having a baby.
Oh, that's a real number.
Oh, yeah. You should answer that and talk to them.
Sorry, I just got a call from, it was just a string of zeros as the phone, United States. I was like, I'm fairly sure it's not the United States, but
yeah. So that is, it's definitely, it's something, that's one of those things that, like, you talk to your agent and your editor and you say, look, I am going to be rather busy in 6 months from now. I know that's when my book is due. Can we, like, I can try to maybe get that in early. Might not happen. Can we make accommodations for that now? And they will almost inevitably say, yes, absolutely, of course.
Totes.
We can make that happen.
Congrats.
Yeah. Yeah. It gets tougher when it's something where, like, you have not one multi-book deal, but you've got a number of books that are already precariously balanced so that the, like, non-compete clauses in various contracts don't conflict with each other. And it's like, well, we could push that one 3 months, but then this other publisher has to agree to push their book 3 months so that they're not clashing with each other. And that gets a little trickier. But
a little dicey, but not the end of the world. Yeah, because, I mean, like we were saying earlier, earlier in the episode, if we know about something early enough, we can kind of get out ahead of it and kind of, but if you're like, so I'm going to give birth like tomorrow and like that book's not done, like that's not.
That's a problem.
That's a problem.
It's like you knew this was coming for like at least 7 months.
The deadline and the baby.
Yeah, so this, it's just, everyone is really happy to accommodate you as long as we all work together to make it happen.
Yeah. And honestly, like, from my experience, the most common thing to affect, like, the most common maternity leave thing to affect an author is not their own maternity leave, but their editors. So,
yes.
You know, or their publicists or whoever. Like, there's many people who could get pregnant in this scenario, and it might not be you. So, just, you know, be communicative and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And if your editor either has been recently pregnant or is hoping to be pregnant somewhere in the near future,
which you might not know because they don't have to share that with
they
you.
They do not have to share that. But yeah, they'll absolutely be understanding and try to accommodate you.
Yeah. So here's an interesting one, kind of related to what we were talking about earlier. Hello, longtime listener, first time caller here. Cool shades and on. I keep hearing that the upcoming election is, more than most elections, going to create a dead zone in fiction publishing, and that editors are wary about slating titles for the fall because there are so many questions about the attention, interest, and energy of readers amidst the sure-to-ensure shit show. Do you have thoughts on this, and have you heard anything similar? I had a client whose book published on election day in 2016. So,
yeah, no one was reading anything for like a month after that.
Or before, quite frankly. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I don't know. What the thing is that like things are still going to get scheduled for that time.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can't. It's sort of like damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? Because if you don't schedule it, then you have an overloaded period of time where other things are in that window around. But if you schedule it, I mean, you run the risk of people.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you sort of can also gamble that, like, maybe someone wants to read something that isn't political.
Yeah. It's like, let us read something that's really far away from the current situation. Hence the sort of rom-com boom in YA.
Mm-hmm.
And
an adult, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. To be fair, that's less my arena, but yeah, it's definitely happening. It's honestly, it's something that, like, can't worry about too much.
It's one of those things where, like, if that's when you're scheduled, that's kind of when you're scheduled.
Yeah.
And then it's yours and your agent's job to make sure that they have a contingency plan for they have to be doing a little extra for that
to get the season. Attention.
Yeah, exactly, because
oh my god.
So We had a question from Jessica. Jessica Blue writes on Tumblr. We noticed this because I had the notification thing flagged, and I hate notification things, but don't send us messages. Send us, or don't send us like the GChat, whatever the GChat equivalent on Tumblr. We're not going to see it for months. So send us like asks, because we'll see those more frequently. But I did see this. So Jessica Blue writes asks, Jen, moving agency has me wondering, when an agent moves to a new agency, does she take her clients with her? Does it depend? In other words, are clients contracted to an agent or the agency itself? Thanks. I really enjoy your podcast. Both?
Yeah.
Weirdly, the answer is both.
The agency agreement, both for, like, at both agencies I've been at, has been between the author and the agency, not the agent. So technically, they were all contracted with Dunham Literary. However, when I left, they were all free to sever that agreement. And my boss, of course, was very willing to sort of let it go. She was like, I'm not the one who wants to work on these books. You're the one who wants to work on these books. Let's let it go with goodwill. And, they all came with me and signed new agency agreements.
But where it gets a little complicated is if you sold something at the old agency, the agency is the agent of record, not the agent. And this is actually mostly a good thing because it's sort of making sure that there's continuity of stewardship, I guess, on the contract.
And it, like, also means that if the agent decides to leave agenting altogether, there's not it's like it's not left in
someone will nowhere, have a hand on the wheel and like be paying checks and stuff.
Totally.
And then we had an anonymous question from the email, which I will open up. also appropriately, our wine tonight is called Frenzy Sauvignon Blanc.
I like it.
So we have a anonymous question from email. As a debut, it's easy to assume you're overreacting or expecting things because others have them because of your deal size. It's also hard to explain when something feels wrong in an area that's often fraught with confusion anyway, i.e. working with publicists, quick deadlines, confusing contracts. How do you know when to raise red flags or even if something is a red flag?
It's a good question because it is so much of this is just sort of like...
subjective.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that one thing that I have started paying attention to more is what is your deal size relative to your publisher? Because I feel like sometimes people are like, oh, I have a six-figure deal. And it's like, well, you have a six-figure deal at a publisher that routinely gives out six-figure deals.
Yeah.
So for them, this is like a good amount of money, but not like...
lead title.
But not lead title money.
Yeah.
And so it's important. And
whereas like half that amount of money at a smaller publisher could mean that like they are putting all of their eggs in your basket.
Right. And you can't really tell which side that's going to come down on
mm-hmm.
until you get the marketing plan.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get the marketing plan until like 5 months before.
Yeah.
6 months before. So yeah. It's hard to tell. I would say, you know, conversations with your agent are the most important here.
It's definitely important to talk to your agent about these things, in part because your agent has a broader realm of experience in these things. Even if you're talking to a couple of different author friends, mm-hmm. you're not necessarily going to have, like, I can go back into our contract archives and see like, yeah, no one has ever gotten this term on this contract. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like we're very unlikely to get it, and that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. And I think for me, this question is more not necessarily about the terms so much as the sort of like intangibles of like, we will give you a marketing plan, but Lord knows what's going to be on it.
Yes. It'll be a blog tour.
Honestly, like one of the pieces of advice that I've been giving to people recently is just to make a list for yourself of things you see being done for other authors.
Mm-hmm.
And just like a casual sort of like, you know, a note in like on your iPhone or something like, oh, so-and-so like got this person article like here, like this person did this, and have that ready so that when you get that marketing plan, you can go to your agent and be like, hey, this is really cool. These are some of the things that I saw being done for other authors of books that are like mine. And then pick like two or three things from that list that you're like, I would really like to do this.
Yeah.
Because if the author or if the editor or agent doesn't know like what you really want, it's hard to kind of figure out like what could be done.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because so much of it is dependent on the author these days.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is fucked up, but sort of how it is.
And
so,
the author really... can't really replicate the what the publisher could do. But
But often the publisher can kind of figure out a way to get that thing for the author.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can't, they can sort of like tell you why. You know?
Like, well, that is going to cost us a lot of money that we don't feel like putting towards your book.
If the thing on your list is a billboard in Times Square.
Yeah.
No. Unless you got that money.
Yep.
That's on you. Like, that's not happening. So.
Yeah. And it is interesting to know, like, what things are bought and paid for, like mm-hmm. the front table displays that Barnes & Noble and things like that is like, those are things, and end cap displays, those are things that might be worth asking for.
1 second. But yeah, there's some things that obviously you can't pay for, but
yeah.
But it's also like only if your agent knows that that's something you really wanted.
Yes.
Is it something that we know to fight for? Well, I think, let me see where we're at time-wise. All right. I'm so tired. I just can't.
So, yes, as I mentioned, I have been irritated with everything I've tried lately. Although a couple weeks ago, I went to get a haircut on the Upper West Side because I haven't changed hairstylists. She does a good job.
It's a great haircut. Highly recommend.
But it's also like 3 blocks away from the Barnes & Noble. So some woman came in at like the wrong time and was like, this is when I have an appointment. And they were like, this is not when you have an appointment. And she also wanted like major dyeing done. And so I showed up at my appointed time. They were like, actually, can you come back in like half an hour? So I went over to the Barnes & Noble and had a $50 gift card in my in my wallet. And I was like, great, I'm gonna spend this gift card. Fun fact, turns out I had already made that decision and there was $4 left.
No.
On
so you bought $46 for
it. Yes. So theoretically I could have changed course at the last minute, but at that point I was invested in all three books that I was buying. So
I'm committed.
But so I got Red, White, and Royal Blue, which I haven't started yet, and The Last True Poets of the Sea, which I also haven't started yet, and This Is How You Lose the Time War, which I am like 15 pages into. And so I am enjoying it so far.
You're not annoyed yet.
I am a little bit annoyed, which is why I stopped at page 15 and was like, I better go to sleep right now because I don't think this is a reflection of the book at all.
Yeah, it's also important to like, is this me or is this like the mood? Because if it's the mood, I should just close it and like just
go do something else.
Go do something else. I feel that extremely. I have read two books lately that, oh God, sorry, did you have another?
No, that was the end of my story.
Again, sorry. So I've read two books recently that I have really just adored. The first is Ninth House by Leigh Bardugo, nice. Which I read and oh my God, it's so fucking good. Like, and it's actually kind of, given me like a little bit of new perspective on like the conversations that we talked about in that one episode.
Mm-hmm.
Something for swears. Like, it was a really good episode title, but we talked about it in one of our previous episodes about there was a big conversation about like trigger warnings in the book and like the author's responsibility. And the more that I think about it, the gladder I am that she didn't like include trigger warnings and that she sort of hasn't really engaged with that conversation, because like there is a lot of incredibly intense, dark content in that book,
mm-hmm.
a lot of it relating to sexual assault. And I think that asking her to sort of like defend the choices to include that in the book would just be asking her to like perform trauma. Like,
yeah.
Why are you allowed to watch to like write about this? It is so good. Like, I don't actually think that I have the words, and I'm actually a little infuriated because I thought that it was like a duology, and it was like, no, turns out it's going to be like a very long series and I'm going to have to wait forever, even though I work at the agency that she's represented by. But the, like, I don't think I've liked a protagonist as much as I've.
Oh, nice.
And she's a character that normally I'd be like, oh no, bad decisions highway. Like, oh God. But no, she's so great. And it's about power and who benefits from that power and systems of power and who upholds them and who benefits from them and who's hurt by them. It's seriously, it's so good. And I think I would say that even if I weren't employed by the agency that is representing her, but it's, oh God, it's so good. The other book that I read recently, I actually purchased it at the McNally Jackson in LaGuardia, which is so nice. It's such a good bookstore and you should go. Like, if you're flying out of the Southwest Terminal, like, go. It's really nice. I bought How to Write an Autobiographical Novel by Alexander Chee.
Oh,
and nice. It's so good. Like, it's just a collection of essays and he's just a genius. So
yeah.
Yeah. Highly recommend.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that's it for us today. Best of luck to everyone doing NaNoWriMo. When we post this, Bridget and I will be on our way to World Fantasy, where we will be dying in a fire?
Hopefully not.
Seriously, hopefully not. I have too much email. I can't die.
If you die, then you never have to answer the emails. They're wiped clean.
Oh boy. Oh boy. Let's not go there.
Uh-huh.
Thank you to everyone who has donated, especially John this week. Thank you to everyone who sent in questions. Thank you to everyone who has given a response to the survey. More exciting things to come from Shipping and Handling. And until next time, happy reading. Bye.